Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey everyone, welcome to Talk Easy, a weekly podcast around conversations with the people shaping our culture today. I'm Sam Fragoso and thank you for being here. This week we're excited to welcome Max Linsky to the show. Born and raised in Boston, Max is the co-founder of Longform, a website and podcast that celebrates the art of long-form journalism both in print and online. Right alongside WTF, it's one of the first podcasts I really got into. They've had great episodes with folks like David Remnick of The New Yorker, Elizabeth Gilbert, Malcolm Gladwell, Ta-Nehisi Coates. The show is so good, in fact, that over the summer, the Hillary Clinton campaign reached out to Max about the idea of doing a podcast with Hillary on the campaign trail. You're not alone if you think that idea sounds strange or far-fetched for our potential future president to be the co-host of a weekly podcast. Max was a little shocked too, but it happened. Since August, Max has sat down with Hillary or someone from the Clinton campaign to just talk. The conversation is casual, interested in, as Linsky says, feeling. Titled With Her, it's a show that wants to understand the headspace of someone who is running for the Oval Office, especially in this election.
This is your last chance. If you can bail now, we don't have to do this podcast. But if we do this, then we got to do it. This is your last opportunity to say, I don't want to do it.
The last opportunity? I can't do it like midway through?
You can't bail after this. This is the moment. Are we doing it or are we not doing it?
You are really making this hard. Okay, we're doing it.
With Her is the first show under the Pineapple Street banner, a podcast / media company Linsky founded in May with the sort of godmother of podcasting, Jenna Weiss-Berman. When I spoke to Max for the episode, he was kind enough to invite me to his office in New York. We recorded it where I believe most of the long-form episodes have been recorded, admittedly giving Max the home court advantage. But it was fascinating and perhaps a little meta to talk about the state of podcasting, the art of interviewing, and, of course, his experiences with Hillary Clinton. First, though, we dive into Max's upbringing and the wild adventures of his 20s. So, finally, here is Max Linsky. You're from Florida?
No, not from Florida. I lived in Florida for a little while.
Okay.
I worked in Florida for a bit, but I'm from Boston. I lived in Boston until I was 13, mm-hmm. and then I moved here to New York City.
Okay.
You seem a little nice from being, you know, considering you're from Boston. You seem like a nice guy.
I think what you're saying is like you're less racist than most people from Boston.
Your words, not mine.
Yeah, I take pride in not being a racist asshole. Yeah, my connection to Boston is weird because I left it, like, you know, I left after eighth grade, mm-hmm. and so like when I go back there, I know it in this very weird way. Like, I don't really know where to get a drink. But I like...
Because you weren't of age, yeah.
Yeah, but I like know where like the good baseball card store used to be. And like I'll find myself like driving and taking like a really circuitous route. And I don't know why. Mm. And then there's like a huge downhill. And I realized like that was the way I would go. So like because I was on a bike and I wanted to go fast downhill. So yeah, but other than that, I don't feel a ton of connection to Boston. I'm kind of in it for the sports teams.
But that doesn't even make sense. Don't you have a Cleveland Browns podcast?
Yeah, I'm not a Cleveland Browns fan.
Okay. Is that the premise of the podcast?
Well, no, that was a weird one, man. They just wanted to do a show, and they brought me and Aaron out there. Aaron's the guy I do long form with, and to like teach them about podcasting. Mm. And so we spent like a day with the Cleveland Browns, and it just seemed like a lark, like a funny thing to do. And we were like, this is what podcasting is. This is what iTunes is. But like at the Cleveland Browns practice facility, it's just such a random way to spend like a Tuesday,
or any day.
Yeah. And then at the end, we were like, well, if it was us, what we do is like a show where you interviewed people, and not just the players, but like coaches and random people from all over the organization. And then they called back a couple days later, and they were like, "Do you want to do it?" And I was like, "Sure." So yeah, literally the first time I'd ever been to Cleveland was to talk to the Cleveland Browns. Mm.
So what happened after 13?
We moved here.
Brooklyn?
I lived in Manhattan.
Okay.
My mom got a job and we moved for my mom. She was an art director. She was a graphic designer.
Oh.
And she got a job working at Newsweek magazine.
Hey, remember the Newsweek was...
Yeah, she worked at Newsweek when Newsweek was like...
The thing.
Yeah, and also like just huge. Huge in a way you can't even understand. Like,
well, explain it to me, Max.
I would go to her office. She had this office on 57th Street. And you know like the Soup Nazi episode of Seinfeld?
Yeah. Religiously.
Yeah. So the Soup Nazi is on 55th. And
was that true?
Okay. And the high school I went to had like 1,000 holidays. So sometimes on holidays, I would go to the Soup Nazi and get soup and bring it up and like have lunch with my mom in her office. And there were so many people who worked at Newsweek. So many people, like thousands of people worked at that weekly news magazine. And now thousands of people do not work at that weekly news magazine.
Well, people were living it up. That's the thing. The print media.
Yeah, I don't know if like I'm supposed to talk about this, but she was able to expense any cultural activity. Like if like my folks went to a Broadway show,
right?
She just like handed in that receipt because it's just good for her to know about that.
Right,
I guess
right.
different time, man, different era.
You know, it's a little bit why that things came crumbling down.
Yeah, totally.
I mean,
yes.
There are other reasons, but like people were certainly living beyond their means.
Well, sort of. They were their means at the time.
They were making enough money then.
Yeah. But it's very difficult when you're making that much money to ever imagine a scenario in which you're not making that much money, which is like...
Is that just making money, though? Is that?
I think it's actually more about power than it is about money. Like, I think it was just impossible for major media organizations to imagine that would ever be anything but the main source. Mm. And, you know, that's like... But that's like... a personal thing too, mm-hmm. you know, like I think it's a very human thing to take your advantage for granted and believe it's like a birthright, you know, not that it's like something that maybe you sort of like lucked into and could be taken away from you too. Mm.
Do you take it for granted?
Do I take it for granted?
Yeah.
I mean, probably, you know, like I'm probably a schmuck about some stuff. I don't take like my wife for granted or my kid.
Mm.
I feel like pretty actively lucky about that.
It seems like a good thing.
Yeah, it's good. They're both good. I like them a ton. They're awesome. They're great roommates.
I love when people say that they like, you know, they like their wife and their kid.
Yeah, my wife is the shit.
Yeah.
She is
Is she smarter than you?
Definitely. Yeah. Way smarter than me.
That seems to always be a sign of a good relationship is that
Yeah, she that was actually, that's funny that you say that, man, because that was the way that I described her when we first started dating. That was like what I told people about her. They were like, what is she like? And I was like, well, first off, she's just much smarter than I am. She's also like a better person, like unequivocally better person. Mm. She's an eighth grade special ed teacher at a public school in Brooklyn.
I mean, you're only okay. That's a thing.
Like, yeah. I mean, I'm a fucking dilettante. I just sit in here and talk to people. She like goes and like improves people's lives. You know, it's an amazing thing. I have all these friends who are like married to journalists and
God, why?
Tell me about it. I mean, there's this thing that I imagine for them, which I can't totally wrap my head around, which is like, going home at the end of the day and just talking about the same shit that I was like looking at all day on the internet, you know, and having the same weight and importance. And like my experience is I go home and like I'll walk in the door and say like, you won't believe what this person tweeted today. And Meredith will just be like, I pulled like a knife off a kid while he was like trying to stab somebody else, you know? And it's like, oh, I'm going to shut the fuck up about Twitter. My life is basically nonsense.
It puts things in perspective.
Pretty instantly, yeah.
So are you going to the Newsweek office as a kid and then seeing, like, is that your first idea of magazine?
My mom worked at the Boston Globe, like, my whole childhood.
Okay.
So I would like, I was like a total latchkey kid. My parents like didn't get home till late. And so if I ever got in trouble, the only way they could punish me was by just making me come to their offices. So and I got in trouble a little bit. So
did it intrigue you early on?
Yeah. I think I think about that a lot, right? Like if my mother had not been in media, if that hadn't been something my dad had done, whether that's where I would have ended up. Like I remember very clearly when I started to like writing for magazines and stuff, thinking it was so like novel. And I just found my path there and then realizing like, nope, that was actually like the only thing I'd seen.
It was right there.
Yeah. It was like the only thing that was demystified at all.
Yeah.
So no, that wasn't totally my first exposure to it. I kind of like grew up around newsrooms, but it was definitely on a different scale for sure.
And college, what were you doing then?
Nothing.
Good.
Being a schmuck.
You're being a schmuck where?
Wesleyan University.
That's a good school.
Yeah, very good school.
How'd you get into there if you're such a schmuck?
This is the answer to that question is I did well on my SATs and poorly in high school, and I was waitlisted at Wesleyan, and I went for I got this letter that was saying you've been waitlisted, but we would like to meet with you, and I went to Middletown, Connecticut, and sat in the admissions office with some dean of admissions. And the guy basically said, like, we think you are capable of doing the work at this school. We're not totally convinced that you will do it. Mm-hmm. Will you do it? And I was like, yes, I think so. And then they let me in.
Man, this insecurity and uncertainty runs deep.
Yeah, man. Like you're the one who wanted to do the interview.
From the beginning. From the beginning. All right, so did you find your footing in college?
College was great. In some respects.
Okay. What respects?
I mean, like, my wife.
You met her in college?
Met her in college. Aaron went to Wesleyan.
Oh, okay. How did you meet your wife? Do you remember, like, the first time?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's a small school, so, like, we kind of knew each other a little bit. But the real story, this is true. I had lived in Cape Town, South Africa, for, like, 6 months. And I was friends with a guy there named Klaus Jürgen Schmidt. And Klaus Jürgen Schmidt was this fantastic artist.
The real name.
Real name. And Klaus had never left Cape Town. And I gave him On the Road to read while I was there. And he got really obsessed with On the Road. I was pretty into it too. And in the last night I was there, we had like a big party. And he came up to me and he was real drunk. And he made me promise that if he could ever get to America, I'd drive cross country with him. And I was like, well, you're dead broke and never even left the city. There's no way you're gonna ever come. Sure. You know? And then, I got a call like a couple months later and it was Klaus and he had won a radio contest and the radio contest was a plane flight to Boston. And so he was like, June 15th, I land in Boston. You have to pick me up. And I was like, I promised the guy. So I went and picked him up and he had $112 and he was going to be in America for 3 months.
What year is this?
2002? No. Yeah, 2002.
So you're what, like 22?
Yeah. Anyway, point of the story is Klaus and I drive cross country, has no money, we're sleeping in the car all the time, having great adventures. We have a tremendous misadventure in New Orleans, which involves Klaus being proposed to by a girl we had been hanging out with and deciding that he didn't want to marry her and, in fact, wanted to leave New Orleans at like 3:30 in the morning. And so we left New Orleans at 3:30 in the morning in my like 20-year-old Jeep, and we got to Houston right at rush hour on like 110-degree day, like middle of July, dead center of July. And it was like standstill gridlock in Houston, and the Jeep started making these sounds like I've like never heard a car make. It sounded like kind of like whale sounds. Like it was just like dying.
Do you want to do an impression?
No. I was like, this is not good. We got through the traffic, and I was like, this car definitely could not drive to California and back. What are we going to do? And I knew one person in the state of Texas, and it was this girl that I was going to college with who I didn't know very well. And I called her and was like, this is Max from college. I'm in Texas. Can I come to your house? And because I need a place to stay. We had no money, so we had like nowhere to stay, and we needed to put the car in the shop. And I married that girl.
Max, that's a great story.
Yeah, yeah, she came with us to California. She and her friend, we took their car and we drove to California, drove back, and then she went to Cuba for like 6 months. And then we came back to college, got together at the end of college, and then left college, and she went to India, and I went back to South Africa, and we were apart for a long time. And then...
So you call her. You guys are like not that close.
No.
And she's like...
I had to say like Max from college.
Yeah, yeah. So, and she said, okay, yeah, come over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like, I've got this like deranged South African kid with me too. That was fun.
Why do you think she said yes to that?
I don't know. I mean, what else was she going to do?
No.
I mean, it wasn't like a fucking serial killer. Like, she'd seen me around. But she was just, you know, she was doing me a solid.
Mm-hmm. That's not like a thing that happens all the time.
I mean, it was the last time it happened to me, for sure.
Well, yeah, because you got married to this person. And then you go back to school to finish.
I have real regrets about college. I'll tell you about them if you want to know.
Go ahead.
I can't really talk about college without talking about it. Like, I was lived with the same group of guys for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And they were all people who lived, like, within, like, an arm's length of me when we were freshmen. And they're all, like, good dudes. But it was real, like, friends by proximity, and we spent a lot of time, like, sitting in our house, like, smoking weed and talking about how people were assholes. Mm-hmm. And college ended, and I lost touch with most of them. Two of them I'm in real close touch with. One of them is, you know, like, one of my closest friends. But I spent all this time, Sam, with these people who, like, I just happen to know, you know? And meanwhile, there are all these fascinating people, and I had no responsibilities or anything to do, and what I chose to do with my time for the most part was like bitch. Mm. Just like sit on a couch and bitch.
Why'd you do that?
I don't know, like some combination of like laziness and fear, I think. Mm. But
I mean, the laziness may be exacerbated.
Yeah, they fit together, but yeah, I don't know. I just it's a funny thing, because I feel like so lucky to have gone there, and I've irrevocably changed my life in all these really positive ways. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like, I took such minimal advantage of that situation.
But it can't be undone.
No, certainly not.
But it upsets you now still.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't think about it a lot, but mm-hmm. that is like a very present thought for me when I think about college. It's just like, could have done that better.
In the moment, did you feel like you could have been doing it better?
No, I like wanted to leave.
You just want to be done with it.
Yeah.
And do what?
Go have adventures and, like, you know, break down on girls' doorsteps and stuff like that, you know? Yeah, I wanted to go, like, live in the world, you know? I wanted to go live lots of crazy places and do crazy things.
Did you do that?
Yeah, I did live a lot of crazy places. I didn't really do crazy things. But took this job in Florida.
What was the job?
I was a staff writer at the Weekly Planet, the alternative news weekly. it was the best job I will ever have, I'll tell you that.
That's not true. There's no way. Tell me how that's true.
It was amazing. Okay. It was a print newspaper. It came out once a week. There was a website, but all they did was like take the stuff that was in the paper and put it on the website. Mm. I got a column after like a month.
And what was Max's column at 23?
It was like Max, The Adventures of Max. Like, I could write about anything I wanted. I had to be a character in it. And
that is great.
It was amazing. I got paid to like learn how to do this, and I had to write one piece a week.
I couldn't
and then
find
I had to write
articles.
Yeah, well, they're pretty well buried. But like, and then I had to write a cover story once a month, and there were these brilliant, experienced journalists who worked at the paper who were kind enough to like stay up late with me working on stories and trying to make stuff better. I had to like convince the editor to start a blog so we could write things not on a weekly schedule. Like, it was great. It was super fun.
So then I don't think you should be able to, I don't think you can regret the college stuff if it led you to that, right?
No, it worked fine. I mean, you know what I'm talking about though, right?
Like, yeah, I do.
I have this experience sometimes, like a friend will come in from out of town, and maybe I've had like a long day or I'm busy or I'm worried about something, right? And you're like, go and see the person as you intended to, have a couple of drinks, have dinner or something. And sometimes you just walk away and you're like, I wasn't totally there for that. It was fine. It's totally fine. But I wasn't all there, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel about college. It was like, it was great. It was great in all these ways. But like, I left kind of just wanting to like, you know, like call college and be like, ah, come on, let's have one more drink. There was like some question I didn't get to ask you or something like that, you know? It's not like a deep burning regret. It's just kind of this like, kind of like hollow. I could have done that better.
Yeah. But you're also talking about presence.
Yeah.
Do you find that you're not present all the time?
Definitely not. Are you present all the time?
No.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
That's like the whole thing, right?
Yeah. Isn't that what Hillary is?
Yeah, she is, man. She's good at that.
Yeah. But rather, let me be more specific. Like, do you find that on this trip, prime example, I've been visiting people I don't get to see.
Yeah.
When I'm at dinner with them or lunch or whatever, I'm trying my absolute best to, like, my phone is off, my computer's closed, I'm trying to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super hard. And the thing, I guess the thing about like the friend out of town, the friend in from out of town metaphor is just like, you don't get a lot of shots, you know?
Right. And that's what I get anxious about because I don't want to fuck it up.
Yeah.
Like I always feel like I'm the lasting impression I give someone. I'm like, oh man, I really got to make sure I get that closing line right. I don't know. I overthink it.
Well, you can take a couple takes with the ending if you want to for this.
Okay.
But
thanks, Max.
I don't know, man. You've done, what, 30-something episodes of this? Like, there are some, right, where you walk away and you just, like, feel full.
Yeah.
And then there's others where it doesn't quite get there.
Yeah.
You know? And
how have you reconciled with that?
I haven't figured that out at all.
Okay.
It's a
I was hoping you had.
Can I have the key to that one? No, man. That's a thing, like, I mean, you can ask Jenna. Like, I go through like real like withdrawal after these interviews and feel like I screwed them up and stuff. But there's someone I just know I was all there and someone I wasn't. And that's my high bar. It's like, I don't really care about like having said the perfect thing, but if it doesn't get to that place, I'm pretty bummed out. Mm-hmm. And I usually assume it's my fault.
I was going to ask you about, I think I heard you talk about this, but the sort of act of falling in love with someone in the middle of the interview. I remember Aaron and like Evan like making fun of you.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like those guys are always making like Max started crying during the interview.
Yeah. It was like, I forgot what episode. It wasn't, you haven't had Joan Didion on, but it was.
Oh, it was Renata Adler. It was Renata Adler, yeah.
How did you know that that's who I was talking about? Is it in the same?
Same genre, but also I remember that one because I was like, you guys, I think I really fell in love with Renata Adler. And
yeah.
They're both like, yeah, dude. Yeah, it's kind of how all these go with you. I did kind of fall in love with Renata Adler.
Yeah,
that's true.
Okay. But do you find that it's a reoccurring thing with you?
I really like talking to people who are closer to the end of their life than I am. And I think the only other person I've actually said that about was Talise. I interviewed Talise like years ago. And I felt that way then too. They're just like, obviously, he's a complicated figure, but... I just have tremendous affection for those two in particular. And there's something about those conversations, and I don't know whether it's generational or whether it's being at that point in your life or whether it's that not many people want to spend 2 hours with Renata, you know, or ask very often. A lot of people would love to spend 2 hours with her, but not a lot of people ask. But those folks are totally present. Mm. I mean, she was completely there.
Yeah.
And absolutely thinking in real time, and did not feel like she had much to lose. That's the whole thing. It's super appealing.
Mm. Why do you think people open up to you?
I definitely give a shit, you know? So I think, like, just thinking about, like, long form, I think people open up to Aaron and Evan and I equally but differently, and about different things, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, man. That I would be interested in what you think about this, too. But in my opinion, it's like, that's actually the only thing that matters with these things. It's like whether you actually care, you know? If you care... Sure, you might go, like, really far down a rabbit hole. Like, you could have kept asking me questions about meeting my wife in 2002 for a long time if you would want to. It's probably not super interesting to most people, but...
It's interesting to me, and I would ask you that not on the podcast.
Right, and therefore, like, it could get somewhere interesting, right? Because I don't think it's very often you're saying, like, journalists don't get asked to be interviewed very often. Don Cheadle doesn't get people to actually listen to him very often either, you know? It's rare.
Listening.
Yeah, listening is rare. Like, not to be too meta about it, but like what you and I are doing now, it's weird, right? We've never met before.
No.
Showed up in my office 40 minutes ago. Wrote me an email, said you wanted to do this. If you had said, I want to get coffee, I probably would have gotten coffee with you because I like your podcast, but I say no to those a lot because I feel very busy at the moment. But it's like, oh, you want to sit with microphones and like talk about our feelings. I'll do that, you know. I'm game for that part of it. And I think it's just rare that you really get to sit down with someone and sort of like ask them what you really want to know. And I mean, I was saying this too. I interviewed Krista Tippett recently, and we were talking about that too. Like, this whole thing feels like a con to me. You know? Like, it feels like a scam, straight scam. Like
what you and I are doing.
Yeah, like, you know, this summer I went and interviewed David Remnick. I sat in the New Yorker office in their little, like, fancy radio studio and asked David Remnick questions for, like, 2 hours or an hour and a half. It was, you know, it's amazing. Like, just an amazing way to spend 90 minutes.
Mm.
And I don't think that there was any other means by which I would have been able to do that. And certainly not just sit there and be like, tell me about your fears as a boss. You know, like, it just feels like a con.
Right.
You put some microphones in front of it and all of a sudden David Remnick will like tell you about his anxieties.
Has the long form podcast gone how you wanted it to?
I didn't know how I wanted it to go. It's definitely exceeded expectations just like long form did, you know?
Has it disappointed you at all? Like not done, once you had reached a certain point, is there something else you wanted to do that hasn't happened?
I don't know. I've never really thought about it that way. I don't feel like very, I never feel like very content with work.
Mm.
Like I'm not good at like celebrating when stuff goes well.
Yeah. Small victories or any victories.
Yeah. I just like, I don't know. I mean, maybe again, I'm sort of like interested in what you think of this, but yeah, for me, it's like, it's hard to, I'm not good at being like, this is awesome. This is crazy. I don't like, do you set goals? Oh,
but like not really, like they're in my head. They're like, do I write them out on like a whiteboard? I think I set like ideas that I'd like to execute in some way or another.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not good at that. Like I didn't have something that was like, if I can just do X, Y, and Z the podcast.
Yeah. That.
No, but I mean, I think that's part of not being able to like really enjoy things when they go well, you know, is like you didn't say this is something I'm trying to do. So
I'm still bad at that. But the thing is, like, I even when things go well, I'm skeptical. But then
you think like the other shoe's gonna drop.
Yeah, but then you know, not to do therapistship. It's like that's such a waste of time. It's so silly to not rejoice in like the good things that happen to us, and so many good things.
Yeah.
Happened to you.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
Happened to me. So it's just like.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely a waste of time. Although it's not even like, I just, it's not even quite as negative as your as it feels to you. Like, I'm just saying, like, you know, there was like a period of a couple of days where like I was just walking around my house, and like occasionally I would just turn to Meredith and be like, I cannot believe I'm gonna interview Hillary Clinton. That is fucking crazy. That's a crazy thing to happen in my life. That is insane. Hillary Clinton, that's crazy.
And weren't you smiling when you were doing that?
Totally. Yeah. But then it was like like a week into it, it was just like, we gotta do another one of these Hillary podcasts. Like we gotta get on these logistics. Let's start thinking about questions.
The
like
logistics, yeah.
Yeah, like it was just like, this is just a thing that's happening now.
It immediately translates from, oh my God, that's happening, to, all right, what's the email? Like, let's just like schedule it out on Google Calendar.
Yeah, like it's just like, oh, all right, now it's like we gotta do this work.
Right. Let's talk about Hillary.
Okay.
Has she taught you anything about yourself talking to her?
Yeah. Yeah, I think she has. A couple of things. One thing is, you and I are wired a little similarly, I think. And
it's a little scary, actually.
Yeah, this is going to be like your most meta episode yet. But if someone like doesn't like me, it bothers me.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like not, it's a hard one for me. I want to like talk it out with people who don't like me. And
you want to talk it out and convince them to like you.
Or I just want to understand. It's just like,
what did I do wrong? What's
yeah, I just want to know what the story is.
Yeah.
And she does not give a shit on such a profound and inspiring level, you know? And like, I caught one millionth of what she does every day right when the thing launched, you know? And I was like getting like crazy anti-Semitic stuff and, you know, there were a bunch of like articles about it that were pretty harsh. And
I read them.
It was amazing because I think so much of the criticism of her is not actually about her at all. And it's been amazing since I started doing this, right? Like, everyone wants to talk to me about her. Like, everyone I meet has Hillary questions. But they're not even questions. They're like opinions expressed as fact. Like, people are so sure that they're so sure of their opinions about her that they present them to me as fact and then ask me to confirm them. And
and do you?
No, because they're wrong for the most part. It's not like I know her super well. I've, like, talked to her a couple of times. But it's so clear to me that people's projections onto her are about almost everything but her. Like, her as a person. A lot of the time. And that's been valuable in the, like, I need to go on a fucking listening tour of everyone who's, like, ever been kind of annoyed by me. You know, like, it has been interesting and helpful in terms of having a tougher skin. Like, I actually wasn't very fazed by those articles, and I think at a different time it would have beat me up pretty good. The other thing that's on me is like, I won't totally blow it. Like, there was some percentage chance that like I was just going to sit down at that table and just like puke on the table. You know, like I was just going to just not be able to comport myself in a way that was worth my being there. And
well, that would have showed like your limits.
Yeah. You know, and it was just like, I was pretty nervous and she wasn't. And
do you generally get nervous before the interviews?
Sometimes. But I was a lot more nervous for that one than I've been for any other one.
Understandably.
And like, at some point it was like, I was just talking to somebody, you know? That's how it felt, at least.
How quickly did it come to that point where it felt...
Quickly, because she was so comfortable. Like, for her, it was just like, it was the easiest thing she was going to do all day. It was just like, sit with some dude.
Yeah.
Talk. So she was so calm and comfortable that it was pretty easy to get there. But yeah, that like... I feel like that was like, it's a weird analogy, but I was once on this like very tiny plane in Africa, and like Almost Famous style, like the plane dropped like 10,000 feet and the pilot got on and was like crash positions and people were freaking out and crying and praying and just like speaking in tongues. It was a really small plane. There was like 10 people on the plane. And people were losing their shit. And it was jumping up and down, and you were smashing into the windows and stuff.
What were you doing?
Super calm. Super calm. And
how old are you here?
19, maybe. And I was just like, it was super, it was wild. And like the plane righted itself for a second. The guy like kind of like half crash landed, like hit the, hit a tarmac. It was the wrong airport, and it like bounced up like several hundred feet and came back down. Like it was wild landing. Stopped like just short of a tree, like went way off the runway, and totally calm the whole time. And it's a little like that, you know, it's just like, there was a bunch of ways this could have gone, and like, I went okay, you know? You don't know how it's going to go when you're going to like interview someone who might be president. You could totally freak out or say like really awkward things or like fumble around and not be able to ask questions. And I was like, oh, here's the thing I know about myself. If a plane is crashing, I'll like be all right. And if I have to interview Hillary Clinton, I will not like sweat so profusely that it's gross and she gets up and walks away.
The story at age 19 of you on the plane, in the moment were you like, oh yeah, this is okay?
It sounds ridiculous.
You had perspective already in the moment? Like,
no, it was just like, I don't know, man. I just wasn't scared. It felt out of my hands. Like it just felt, I was aware that I was not in any control of what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just going to, I'm like, it sounds, it's all, the whole thing sounds corny. I know. It was just like, I was surprised that I was not scared, but I wasn't scared.
I'm surprised too.
Yeah, it's wild. I'm scared of all kinds of shit.
What are you scared of?
I really walked into that one.
Yeah. Don't get me like this. I'm scared of spiders type bullshit.
No. I'm not scared of spiders. My dad's 76. He just fell last week. He's in Italy. He fell and broke his femur in half. And he just had like emergency hip replacement surgery. It was so high up that it was like broke that they had to replace his hip. He's at some like middle of nowhere hospital in Italy. And
just him?
My mom is there too.
Oh.
And but it was scary. Like we tried to find another place for him to get operated on, and you know, he's spooked and pretty scared of him dying. Like that guy a lot. I'd really like him to not die. Been thinking about him a lot. But he's okay. Yeah, the surgery is all right.
Is your mom the same age?
My mom's a little younger.
A little younger.
Yeah. I mean, I'm close to both of them, but like, he's fun to talk to.
Yeah.
Talk to him a lot.
What frustrates me is like, what scares me is the same thing when I get afraid of dying, which is that I can't figure out like a door that will get me out of it. Like a door that will like save me from, like I can't figure out the thing, and I don't think there is one. And that,
I'm pretty sure there's not. But yeah, I'm really scared of that. I'm really scared of what it's going to be like to such a selfish way to think of it. But I am very scared of what it's going to be like to not be able to call that guy. But it's just like there's something about this week with him like getting hurt in this way, and just, you know, it's more present than it normally is.
Did you want to like fly out there?
Yeah, that was part of what was weird, man. It was like any other time, I feel like any other time in my life, like I just would have been on a plane. And I got that phone call and was like immediately like looking at flights and trying to figure it out. But it's like, you know, got a kid, got this company, got these people who work for me.
You got Hillary.
Got to interview Hillary Clinton. You know, like literally I would have had to cancel an interview with Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to him and he was like, doesn't make any sense. Don't come here.
What's your work personal life like ratio? Do you find that you put work before everything else?
I don't know. Like, do you think about the podcast as work?
Maybe some. Yeah. No, I love it. So
that's how I feel. I don't know.
Sure, but it's still, regardless, it doesn't take away from the fact that, like, one, I don't have a kid, and I'm not married.
Yeah.
So, like, you're still not with them when they're doing the podcast. I'm sure you love, I'm not saying it's, you don't love the work.
I'm much more protective of my weekends than I used to be.
That seems like an adult thing.
Yeah, like I hang, like that kid wakes up at 6:30 in the morning on Saturday, and I'm basically with him until he goes to bed at 8 o'clock on Sunday night.
Oh my god, you're waking up at 6:30 on a Saturday?
I wake up at 6:30 every day.
Oh, okay. Is that your routine?
Yeah, yeah. I go. That's when this kid wakes up. Mm. And then that's when you wake up.
Okay.
And then you go make that kid scrambled eggs and a piece of toast.
Do you go to bed early too?
I've had such a bad week, Sam. I feel like such shit right now. I can't even tell you. I haven't gotten to bed before midnight in 4 nights. Mm. And I'm old now. Like, I can't do that.
You seem okay right now, though. I mean, you seem tired.
Talking to you has made me feel better. It's true.
Okay.
The answer to that previous question is I really like work. Like, what I do is really fun. And some of it is hard, and some of it's, like, painstaking. But, right now, rules.
Like, this moment, yeah.
Yeah, right now it's great. Yeah. You know, like, what's happening right now is I do this podcast where I talk to, like, people whose work I admire tremendously. Mm-hmm. That happens sometimes. I spend 2 days a week working with Wesley Morris and Jenna Wortham on their podcast. Like, just sit with those guys and listen to them talk out loud. Feels like a very privileged space to be in.
They're great.
Occasionally I go and interview, knock on wood, the next president of the United States.
Is this peak max right now?
I fucking hope not, dude. But it's pretty fun. And then, like, you know, I'm doing this thing with Jenna Weiss Berman, who's the best.
Mm-hmm. Has the Hillary stuff passed, surrealism? Like, does it feel...
It's kind of like what we were talking about before, you know, where, like, most of the time it's just, like, something that I'm doing. Mm. And it's crazy, you know? Like, I'm aware of that it is crazy. But the thing you learn, right, is that all these people are just people. They're really smart. And a lot of them have, like, tremendous power. But they're still just people.
Yeah.
And I find that to be, like, incredibly validating and inspiring thing. Yeah. It's like, it's messy, and they're just trying to make things work too.
Mm. That's and you've seen it at, like, the Hillary's, like, that level.
Yeah, they're still just trying to figure it out every day.
They're just trying to live their life.
I know, it's amazing. And I find that, like, I always assumed that, like, behind door number two was, like, just a world of
order.
Totally organized people with 5-year plans who are, like, just checking boxes all day. And
it doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't exist. And it's so, I find it so appealing. It
kind of makes everything okay.
Totally. Because I definitely do not have any boxes to check. Mm. And you're a young man.
You're still young-ish.
I'm not going to ever, like, be a box check person, I think.
No.
Like, I'm never going to figure out that level of organization system. Have you ever tried to do a bullet journal?
What is that, Max?
It's like a life hacky thing that was, like, it's so appealing. You watch these videos on the internet, and it's just like, here's a notebook, and you can organize your entire life, and, like, all of your goals, and all of your to-do lists, and that's, like, all you need is this little key, and, like, everything works. It just takes 5 minutes to set up your bullet journal. And, like, I did it, like a year ago.
Oh, good.
I bought a notebook, and I set up this bullet journal, and I was, like, writing out the, like, legend, you know, like, you make up icons for different things. And I had this moment where I was, like, making up this icon, and I was like, whoa, I have totally done this before. And I found another notebook, which I had, like, 3 years before, in some other depth of, like, I have totally disorganized. I'd been like, I'm going to do one of these bullet journals. The point of the story is, I'm never going to do a bullet journal. Like, I'm never going to be totally organized
and
have this shit figured out.
Returning to the bullet journal
every couple of years, like, when I am tired and feeling badly about myself, I will take some desperate swing at a bullet journal, but it's never gonna take.
What did you write?
I didn't even get there. Like, I just set
what
up
about the
lines.
Old one?
Nothing.
I
disregarded
again?
That one too.
Jesus Christ,
yeah,
Max.
That's what I'm saying. It's but I find it so appealing to know that no one really has it all figured out.
No.
Even if you can't get your act together to do a bullet journal. Mm-hmm.
What about writing?
What about?
Where's, like, what happened to you writing? What happened to you writing about Brain Gym Showdown?
What happened about writing?
I read that today.
Yeah.
That was good, Max.
Kick the shit out of those old people.
Yeah, well, she gave you a run for your money. Ava.
I got offered this job to edit a newspaper when I was, like, 24. And I took it. And it was a really weird job. It's really hard. I wasn't very good at it. But
based on what?
What was I not very good at?
No. Based on like, why did you get hired?
So that job I was telling you about, that was like the best job I'll ever have. Yeah. It was at a chain.
Okay.
And I quit because the girl from Texas was living in San Francisco, and I was like, I need to go be where that girl is. And they were like, the day after I quit, they like called me and they were like, do you want to edit this other paper in the chain? And it was really small paper. But I was like, they're going to be the boss.
Yeah.
So I did it, and it was really hard, super hard. I was so unprepared and overwhelmed, and I could have written a lot in that job and didn't, and I haven't really written very much since.
But it seemed like something you wanted to do, right?
Definitely, yeah. And I think I told myself that, like, and I wanted to write features. Like, I wanted to write long magazine articles.
Right.
Like, what I wanted to do was, like, get a job at The New Yorker. That was, like, all I wanted in life.
When did that change?
I think it just seemed too hard. Like, I think I decided I wasn't good enough at it. And...
Do you still think that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't written anything in a long time. And for a long time, I missed it. And I felt conflicted about it. And I called a friend of mine like 2 years ago, maybe. And it's like this fantastic writer and editor. And tough. She's real tough. And I called her and was like, listen, I want to write a column. And I need someone to just like hold me to it. So you're going to be that person. And she was like, okay. And she did it, like totally harassed me. And I sent her one column. And then I stopped sending them. And I saw her at a wedding actually a couple weeks ago. And she was like, I stopped harassing you about that column. Can you just let me off the hook now? Are you feeling sated? Do you still have this like empty place in your creative soul or whatever? And I was like, yeah, I feel fine now. You don't have to feel bad about that. But I do think that doing these interviews has scratched some of that itch for me. Like, I definitely don't think about writing very much. Like before we started doing the podcast, I think for me, I did feel this like, something of like a void. Like I didn't feel like I was like putting anything out in the world. And, I really like doing these interviews a lot. And I think it has, replaced that.
But sometimes listening to those, I get inspired to write because of those interviews. I would think like, I mean, some of those conversations you have, like you're so close to it. I don't know. I would imagine you'd be like, oh, no.
I mean, you can take this however you want. The truth is that like my experience of those conversations is like, I don't have the like talent or desire to do this at this level. That's been my experience of doing the long form podcast is like,
is that the overarching is
you know? At least as it relates to my writing. Yeah. Like definitely I don't finish these things and be like, I want to stop doing all of this and go spend like 3 months working on a piece.
I don't really mean that. I just meant like, you clearly are a good writer from the limited I've read. You have ability. You're a smart guy.
Sure.
Observant. You have resources. I feel like you could, theoretically you could do it. But have you sat down and like tried and then it just didn't happen?
No, I haven't sat down and tried. I've written almost nothing ever in my life that didn't like appear somewhere. So it's very hard for me to just like sit down and write something. But I can tell you, all I'm trying to tell you is like these interviews end and your experience may be, you are a writer, like you are currently writing. So that's the difference between you and I. But like your experience may be like that is inspiring and I want to go write more. And I leave these interviews and like... I really want to be a better interviewer. Like that's what I think about is like, I want to be much, much, much better at this.
Right.
That's really important to me.
Do you think you've gotten better?
Yeah. I mean, the bar was pretty fucking low, but yeah. Yeah. I do think I've gotten better. Like how many questions do you have on that thing?
No, there's no questions.
Yeah. That's good. Like when I started doing it, I had 1,000 questions.
These are just notes. I actually have a little, it's a timeline of your life, but very small.
Yeah.
I couldn't find much.
That's the way to do it though, is Like when I started, I would come in with this list of like 1,000 questions.
Yeah, no.
And
I mean, how many times have you seen me look at this?
No, you've been great. You've done great. But that is a way that I've gotten better. Is like, it feels like a little bit more of a high wire act.
You know?
Like you can kind of.
It's all right here.
Yeah, you can really like fall off. You can fall into weird places. But
that's sometimes half the show.
Yeah, yeah. I think that it forces you to listen. Mm. That is the whole thing. The whole thing about not having a bunch of questions in front of you is it forces you to listen because you don't know what you're going to ask next. And the only thing you could possibly ask is related to something that the person just said. You just closed your notebook. That's awesome.
I have one last thing.
Oh, we're done?
No, okay. We're not done. I got one last thing.
I'm ready.
Yeah. this has been so meta. It's ridiculous.
It's outrageous.
I kind of want to put the Remnick question on you.
Oh, okay. What was the Remnick question?
The last thing you asked him.
Oh, what do you want to do?
Yeah, well, like, the Hillary podcast is ostensibly going to end. Maybe it'll come back for season two when she gets elected.
Yeah,
season
two
with Max and Hillary. The long-form podcast is going well. You have the Pineapple Street stuff.
Yeah.
All of that's happening.
Yeah.
Is it enough?
For what?
You.
Yeah, sure. I mean... The pineapple stuff is in a fascinating place, and I have no idea what's going to happen. You know, my piece of this was that I just wanted to do another podcast. Mm. You know, and that was that was the energy that I brought to it, and obviously we're doing a whole bunch of other stuff. But I feel like I'm in a great spot to do another podcast. So I'd like to do that. But I don't know. I mean, is it enough? I don't know, man. Both things can be true. Like, it's amazing. And all the stuff I get to do all day, like I was saying before, like, it's fulfilling and wild and definitely, like, exceeding any expectations I had. And also, most of the time, I'm just, like, trying to think about what's next, you know?
And then there's the time where you still think, oh, I'm not that good at this.
Yes, I do think of that a lot. But I don't think it's as bad. I don't think it's such a bad instinct, you know?
You think it's motivating?
Yeah, yeah. And like, you know, I don't think like false humility is very becoming. Mm-hmm. And I think I have... fallen prey to that at some points.
Do you just have actual humility now?
I don't know. No. Maybe. I don't know the answer to that question. But like, I do want to get better at all this stuff. And I don't think you can really actively want to get better if you don't feel like you can, you know? I don't know what to tell you, Sam. I feel very lucky. Things right now are great. I'm gonna, like, we're gonna shut off these microphones. I'm gonna go home. There's gonna be this like kid there, and this lady there. I like them both a lot.
You mentioned that.
Can't feel more enoughness in that world. And right now, what I spend my days doing is like fun and challenging and. Hard, you know? So that seems really good. And also, if this is all I ever do, I'll be bored as hell. So it's both enough and not enough, I guess.
I guess we'll have to check back in a few years.
Yeah, next time you come wandering around New York, you can pop over to wherever I am and come into the studio and we can ask each other the same question over and over again.
Okay, that sounds fun.
Thanks for doing this, Sam.
Hey.
I got you.
Hey, thanks for doing this, Max.
Thanks for taking the time.
Well, there it is. You can regularly hear Max on both Long Form and With Her. Be sure to check both of those out wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll include them in the show notes. No one extra to thank this week. Just Max for doing the show, yeah, but... mostly for everything else he's been doing. I can't imagine Talk Easy existing without the long form podcast. So thank you, Max. People. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to check out past conversations with Sherman Alexie, Amy Nicholson, or Wesley Morris, whom Max works with on the Still Processing podcast. Secondly, if you thought what you heard today was, like, pretty good, it would help us a lot if you took 2 minutes out of your day to write a review of Talk Easy on iTunes. Each little positive sentiment helps new listeners find the show. If you're not currently doing so already, you can subscribe to the program on iTunes, SoundCloud, or your favorite podcasting app. If you want to drop us a line about anything, feel free to email the show at talkeasypod@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at TalkEasyPod, as well as our website, www.talkeasypod.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at TalkEasyPod, as well as our website, www.talkeasypod.com. As always, our theme music is provided by Vanilla. Our executive producer is David Chen. Graphics by Ian Jones. Illustrations by Krishna Shenoy. Social media by Maria Mayella. The show is produced and edited by Corey Attad. I'm your host, Sam Fragoso. Thank you for listening to Talk Easy. We're off next week with the election, so if you can, please, please, please go vote. Now more than ever. I'll see you back here on the 15th. Be well, and so long. People.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody. And every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.